Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond reading with you today the March 22nd issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. We'll begin with a front page feature article headlined Outreach Guides New Vision. Former Ice House Becomes Ministry Hub. And this was written by Teresa Churchill. You could say that transforming a nightclub into a church sanctuary was all in a day's work. Not in the sense that it was easy. Volunteers did everything over the past 4 months but the plumbing and electrical work that had to be done by a licensed professional. It was a lot of 18-hour days, said the Reverend Aaron Warner, associate pastor of New Vision Church of God. But in the sense that the work furthered the mission of New Vision Church, dedicated as Christ was to serving the least of these, the project fit right in. Operating under the umbrella of New Vision Urban Ministries, the church will debut its new sanctuary on Easter Sunday on the east end of the former Ice House complex in space that was once home to the Brick House Club. All the posts had mirrors on them, said the Reverend Dow Moses, pastor of the church. We had to change everything. This comes after the church relocated its New Vision thrift store in February from East Cerro Gordo Street to a former garage in the back of the complex, and as members of the congregation are in the process of creating a coffee bar, kitchen, fellowship hall, and offices where the Ice House flea market used to be. The final steps should come by May 1st, when New Vision moves its food pantry from its former church at 1414 West Grove Road into a space on the west end of the complex most recently occupied by Recycled Treasures Thrift Shop. We get calls all the time from people who can't get to our food pantry because the buses go no farther than Enterprise School, and that's more than a half mile away, Moses said. The inner city is where we are called to be. The only ministry that won't be housed at the former Ice House will be New Vision's Shelter for Homeless Men at 807 North Monroe Street. Moses said he is proud of his congregation, who he describes as the hardest working bunch he's had in 25 years of ministry. Many churches have chosen to move outside the central city, but we have a totally different mindset, he said. Our people want to be part of something active. Jared Bolin, Rick Merrick, Joe Reich, and Donnie Sapp come to his and Warner's minds when asked to name some of the volunteers who made New Vision Urban Ministries possible. But so do the names of Sharon Wilson, 70, who spends 2 days a week sorting and displaying the clothing at the thrift store, and Pat McCain, 64, who has practically made New Vision a full-time job since retiring 2 years ago as a calibration technician for Acorn Pharmaceuticals. Quote, "This is my ministry, what I feel my God wants me to do, just as we believe moving here is what God wants the congregation to do," Wilson said. McCain said he believes in the move and in the mission of New Vision, too. "I enjoy keeping busy," he added. "There's nothing worse than sitting at home." A sidebar to this article lists some pertinent information about New Vision. Its Sunday services are at 9:30 a.m. for traditional worship and 10:45 a.m. for contemporary service. There's also 7 p.m. Bible study on Wednesdays. They're located at 550 North Van Dyke Street. And there are also several photographs included with the article. One shows Sharon Wilson, who's a volunteer, stocking shelves at the New Vision Thrift Store. And then another shows volunteer Donnie Sapp, who is using a very long pole to paint the ceiling of the office area. And furthermore, a photograph shows volunteer Pat McCain sitting on the floor working on a range in what will be the kitchen at New Vision Church. And finally, the first services to be held in the New Vision Church of God sanctuary will be on Easter Sunday. And there's a lovely photograph of that sanctuary. And the final picture shows New Vision Church from the exterior, the former Ice House building. And that's pretty much the extent of the photographs. Also on the front page is this news, headlined, Council Approves Rezoning at MacArthur-Pershing Intersection. Rezoning at the intersection of Pershing and MacArthur Roads paved the way Monday for development of potential office, retail, and restaurant space. The Decatur City Council voted 6-1 to rezone 1.79 acres on the northeast corner of the intersection. Because it was designated as a planned development, the outlined uses are specific, and changes would have to come back to the council for future votes, officials said. Quote, I know that it's hard any time you encroach upon a neighborhood, but I think this fits in the area, and it's an opportunity for new development, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said. And I think the rest of the neighborhood will be okay. Two neighbors spoke against the proposal, and more than 100 signed a petition opposing specifically the retail and restaurant aspects of the development. Quote, why upset the neighborhood that is already clean and neat and happy? Why not go make one happy and keep this one nice, said resident Lori Johnson. Quote, take your restaurant and your retail and put it in one of those places that needs something in it. That's already zoned for that. Some of the concerns stem from uncertainty about what will appear on the site, where the developer plans to construct a 12,576 square foot building. Engineer Phil Cochran, representing developer MacArthur Pershing LLC, said the developer needs flexibility. Quote, this is generally a spec building, and as such, the developer needs to have some latitude in what's going to be the interior build-out of the building, he said. But Cochran said the allotment of 73 parking spaces provides limitations because developments such as a large restaurant would require more parking. Councilman Bill Faber was the lone no vote. He expressed concerns about the procedure that the city's plan commission followed at its March 3rd meeting when it considered the proposal. Faber said the city's zoning ordinance requires the commission to issue written findings on a variety of factors related to a planned development, such as compatibility with the surrounding neighborhood, traffic capacity, and adequacy of utilities. The commission heard city staff findings on those factors and recommended approval of the proposal, but did not lay out specific findings of its own. Quote, I'm not trying to be difficult here, Faber said. I'm trying to be helpful and point out to our legislative body here that we have not followed the zoning ordinance and it would be subject to challenge if we don't, so it should be brought before us correctly. Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus said the commission routinely votes to adopt city staff's findings if it agrees with them and has offered additions or changes in some instances. Corporation Counsel Wendy Morthland said she was comfortable that the commission had followed the ordinance. In other business, the council heard a detailed presentation from city staff about the possibility to grow the city's fiber network, something officials cited as an economic development opportunity. Quote, "We have to have something that sets us apart, and this is what it's going to be," Moore Wolf said. "This is our opportunity for entrepreneurs to come here to really take the development downtown to the next level." The city installed its own fiber backbone in 2014 along Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, connecting city facilities. The next step involves connecting that line with Richland Community College, which is linked to the rest of the state. The city would lease space on the fiber to internet service providers rather than acting as a provider itself. Eventually, officials hope to develop a loop of fiber around the city. Council members generally expressed support for the idea and willingness to hear more about the next step, which could come as soon as the April 4th council meeting. Also, the council approved a lease agreement to facilitate a partnership between Crossing Healthcare and Good Samaritan Inn. The two would work together on a garden that would allow Crossing to write prescriptions for fresh produce to patients. The prescriptions could be redeemed in the garden to be located in the 200 to 300 blocks of East Central Avenue. Also on the first page, we find an education article headlined "Proposals Seek Full Education Funding," and this was written by Valerie Wells. It's been several years since Illinois school districts received full funding from the state. The foundation grant, as it's called, is $6,119 per student. Poor districts with low property values depend heavily on that money and have to levy higher taxes to compensate. Yet year after year, the foundation grant has been prorated, and districts have received only a percentage of that $6,119. According to Beth Purvis, Governor Bruce Rauner's education secretary, the governor has proposed ending the practice of proration, fully funding the state's portion of public education. Quote, "The governor feels funding education is the most important thing we do as a state, especially in the midst of a difficult time," Purvis said. The Illinois State Board of Education has recommended the same proposal and also has recommended increasing the foundation level to $6,327, said Todd Kovalt, Chief Operations Officer for Decatur Schools. Decatur is one of those districts that depends heavily on state funds and lost $4 million in fiscal year 2016 due to proration. Quote, "This state has got to get away from the emphasis on local property taxes driving education," Kovalt said. "Districts with greater property wealth can afford to pay teachers more," he said, which means that when poorer districts need teachers, they have a harder time getting them. People don't understand that if property values drive education, areas that have a lot of wealth attract more businesses, he said. If my tax levies are smaller, that's prime for continued growth. But then you get into East St. Louis with little property wealth, and property taxes are so enormous. It's really creating a dynamic statewide. It's not just about Decatur. One of the ways to eliminate proration that is under consideration, Covalt said, is to include special education funding dollars in the foundation grant, rather than pay those funds separately, as has been done in the past. Districts will have to pay for special education out of those funds. Overall, Decatur will possibly receive about $2 million more if it goes through as proposed. School funding was the only part of the fiscal year 16 budget that was passed, Purvis said, and the governor is recommending that the school funding portion of the FY17 budget be passed as soon as possible, also to allow districts to plan for the 2016-17 school year. If the legislators do so, and if they approve the halt of proration of the foundation grant, the money will have to come from somewhere. Purvis said cuts in other areas statewide will provide the funding, though the exact cuts have yet to be decided. There is revenue, she said, if we believe that the education of our children is first and foremost, then we need to start by figuring out what schools need and act accordingly across the rest of the budget. Though the governor believes the state should address education funding overall, passing SB1 or similar legislation that would equalize the money districts in rich and poor areas receive is not likely to happen soon, she said. State Senator Andy Maynard, Democrat from Bunker Hill, said eliminating proration will not fix the underlying problem and that overall reform is the only answer. Quote, if we all recognize that our current funding formula is broken, why would the Republicans want to max out the money going into it, he said. Let's do the work and give taxpayers a better product. We have an obligation to provide the best quality education possible for our students, and until our formula is changed, we are prevented from doing that. Turning to page 3, we find another article concerning education. This was written by Valerie Wells, and the headline reads, Students Get the Rap on Athletic Trainers. Dateline Decatur. Adam Mack is a gifted artist, but he has another career in mind. He wants to be a physical therapist. Quote, it's something in the health field that doesn't take as much training, but you still make good money, he said at his internship with Millikan University's athletic training department. He plans to attend Millikan next year. As one of the Inspired Futures interns, Mac's interest in physical therapy made a perfect match difficult, said Ashley Grained, extended learning coordinator. Athletic training was the closest fit they had for him at first, though he will shortly start making visits to Decatur Memorial Hospital to job shadow a physical therapist. His fellow intern, Aubrey Dashiell, does want to be an athletic trainer and plans to go to Southern Illinois University at Carbondale next year. Quote, when I was a junior, I had to quit soccer because of my back, she said. Because she couldn't participate, she began hanging out with the school athletic trainer to watch and learn. And that sparked her interest in the career. As athletic trainer, an athletic trainer provides sports medicine to all the athletes, said Chris Danbury, athletic trainer at Milliken, which in his case is over 500 athletes on 19 teams. The four certified trainers do everything from preventive work, which is exercise to help the athletes avoid injury, to rehabilitation after an injury, to on-the-field assessments and treatments, to helping those who have a chronic injury so that they can play anyway. Quote, "The only stage we're not actively involved in is the actual surgery," Danbury said. "With those two, we're teaching some basic athletic training skills. Today, they're doing some Achilles tapings, which we use for tendonitis. Over the past couple of days, we've gone over some basic ankle stabilizing for things like ankle sprains. He's starting with the foot and ankle and working his way up, spending a week at a time on each area," he said. Currently, athletic trainers must have a bachelor's degree and certification and renew their license every 2 years with required continuing education. In the next, or in the near future, a master's degree will be required, Danbury said. He already has his, but trainers who are already certified when the new requirements are enacted will be grandfathered in. The students practice on each other. Because they're not certified, they can't do any treatments on real injuries, but they can watch the certified trainers and learn from them, Dashiell said. Two photographs that accompany this article show intern Adam Mack practicing an Achilles taping on fellow intern Aubrey Dashiell as the athletic trainer at the Milliken Athletic Training Department in Griswold Center. Chris Danbury demonstrates for them. And they both have a very, very attentive, serious look on their faces. The next headline also relates to the healthcare industry, and the headline is Webster Cantrell Hall adds counseling for adults, and the dateline is Decatur. The writer was Teresa Churchill. Webster Cantrell Hall is expanding its outpatient counseling program beyond what the agency has offered for many years to children 17 and younger. The Illinois Department of Human Services is certifying the agency to counsel Medicaid-eligible adults, thus family therapy, marriage counseling, and other services are being added. Amy Still, Director of Clinical Services, said the expansion has been a dream of hers for the past 7 or 8 years and aligns with a directive by new CEO Martin Harris to diversity funding sources. Therapists will also see self-pay and privately insured patients. Quote, "Another exciting thing for us is we're also going to be able to offer different kinds of group settings as well," Still said. "These include anger management, depression, anxiety, addiction, and other topics based on community needs." Webster Cantrell Hall phased out its in-house classrooms this school year for the 26 males and 8 females ages 12 to 17 it serves in residential care and transitioned that staff and those students into the Decatur School District's Special Education Alternative Program. That opens those rooms, the agency's facility at 1942 East Cantrell Street, for the counseling expansion. Still said, Webster Cantrell is looking to hire one or two more clinicians to deliver those services to be overseen by lead clinician Andrea Burns. Quote, even just the families we were already working with have a need for family counseling that we could not previously provide in-house, Still said. It can be very hard to access other community resources with the state's budget impasse. Still added that expanded counseling will allow the agency to take client care a step further in conjunction with all of its services, which include a foster care program involving 165 children, in addition to residential services for 43 teens, counting Webster Cantrell's emergency shelter. Here are some headlines from the Decatur A3 briefs for today. Downtown dumpster fire. A dumpster fire Monday evening in an alley behind a downtown Decatur restaurant burned so fiercely it melted the rosin dumpster and started to blacken nearby electrical cables before firefighters doused the flames. The blaze in the 4-foot by 6-foot dumpster behind Robbie's Grill, 122 North Merchant Street, had first been tackled by restaurant staff with an extinguisher, but the flames were too intense and fire crews were called at 6:20 p.m. They knocked the fire down in seconds, but the blazing cardboard and paper garbage had already burned through the dumpster. Firemen say at least one nearby electrical meter will probably have to be repaired. The cause of the fire is under investigation and may be a case for arson. Here's a notice about Rock Springs Mini Camp. Quacking Ducks Mini Camp at Rock Springs Nature Center is for children ages 1 to 5 with an adult. Camp for children will be held from 9:30 to 10 to 10:30 Tuesday, March 29th, and another camp for children 3 to 5 will be from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. March 31st, a Thursday. Children will dive into the world of ducks through songs, crafts, stories, and activities. The cost is $10 per child. Pre-register online by noon, Monday, March 28, at MaconCountyConservation.org. Vinny's Barbecue will be holding its 15th annual Easter dinner for the homeless from 1 to 2:30 p.m. Sunday, March 27th in Water Street Mission, 758 North Water Street. We'll take a short break now and return with the second part of the Decatur Herald and Review issue dated March 22nd. Please stay tuned.